present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart. Hello and welcome again to a new series of the news quiz, coming this week from the Pleasance Theatre at the Edinburgh Fringe. We start with a cutting from The Guardian, read by Brian Perkins.
Rotherham Council has approved plans to convert the former Conservative Club into a unit for the mentally ill.
Thanks to Leslie Vines of Finchley for that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Fred McCauley. And facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Steve Punt. And before we start round one, here's a cutting from the South Manchester Ad Saver Weekly.
For sale, electric wheelchair, brand new, never used, due to ill health.
Thanks to Joan Abbas of Manchester for spotting that. Francis, who called Peter the Crab to Roger the Spin Doctor?
Well, this is all because Tony Blair's on holiday, and while he's away for the last few weeks, the country's been run by Peter Mandelson and John Prescott, the sort of noddy and big ears of Westminster, and they've been making rather a hash of it. And Prescott went down to the Thames this week and fished out a bit of pond life and called it Peter, appointed it Crab Without Portfolio. And the papers are full of stuff pointing out the similarities between Mandelson and this crab, saying that he's a little scuttling creature that runs sideways and nips people's ankles, which is true of Mandelson, but actually isn't true of this crab, because it seems to be called a Chinese mitten crab, which implies that it wears little woolly mittens rather sweetly, so that when it nips you, you just get a rather pleasant tickling sensation. Charming. So actually, I had that sensation from Mandelson once, about a year or so ago. I was standing in the central lobby of the House of Commons, and I felt this breath on the back of my neck, someone blowing on the nape of my neck. And I turned around, and there he was, Prince of Darkness. This is how he greets people.
Of course, you had all your hair then, and you were slimmer.
But you probably have all this with Mandelson, don't you? You go to the House of Commons, Simon, all the time. Does he tickle you?
No, he doesn't breathe on me either, but I don't think he's got the wrong idea about me, as he clearly has with you, Francis. This was John Prescott, who poked fun at Peter Mandelson by publicly naming a crab after him. The hideous creature, with bulging eyes and hairy legs, said he intended no insult by comparing his fellow minister to the crab. Mr. Prescott was incensed by the news that the Millennium Dome is to be built on an empty East London site by a German firm, but this seems logical since Germany supplied the equipment which originally cleared the site. Two points to Francis. Fred, who have united to end the union?
Everyone. And thanks, Simon, for covering that up. I was going to cheat because I've no idea what you're referring to. This is Scotland, and most of the political parties up here that want to see us devolve from 300 years of oppression got together this week and launched the Yes, Yes campaign. Because we've had 300 years of English people making decisions for us up here, and we're going to have a devolution vote in just a few short weeks. And after that, we're on our own, which will be very scary. No comedy, but a round of applause, not bad. In just about a year or 18 months from now, we'll have to say, look at the decisions we've made and what a mess we're in. But it's still the English fault.
Why isn't it called II rather than Yes, Yes?
Because II is a chat-up line up here.
New Labour have insisted that the time is right to allow Scotland to go it alone. In other words, the oil is beginning to run out.
Incidentally, you know that we've got lots of water up here, and that there's areas of England that are actually wanting to buy water from Scotland, and it's a market that's estimated at about £5 million a year, and for another £1 million we won't pee in it.
Two points to Fred. Steve, whose Olympic ideals are just not cricket?
Yes, this is the putative British Academy of Sporting Excellence. or the Contradiction in Terms Academy, as it's probably better known. And, yeah, it's a big fuss about cricket. And I have to say, without wishing to sound as if I'm trying to ingratiate myself, one thing I've always admired about the Scots is their attitude to cricket. Because, you know, generally nations have a sort of generous attitude when a sport is invented. You know, the Scots invented golf, and the English said, you know, that's a good sport, we'd like to play that too. And the English invented football, and the Scots said, yeah, that's good, we'd like to play that. And you probably know the story of William Webb Ellis, the English invented rugby, and the Scots said, that's a good game, we'd like to play that. And the English invented cricket, and the Scots said, piss off. Standing around in a field for 5 days throwing a ball at three bits of wood, we've got better things to do with our time. Surely. I thought tossing the cable is stupid till I saw that. There's a big fuss about it in England. Every year there's a big fuss about the decline in English cricket. It's been suggested that it could be saved by spending more money by putting it on satellite, which I personally think is a good idea, because cricket is the only sport in the world which is actually improved by having adverts in it. Normally it kind of ruins things. Now, Damon Hill overtakes Schumacher for the first time this season, and ITV is showing you an ad for the Ford Escort. But with cricket, it's great. It's sort of what's going on. Oh, some bloke's just walking back, rubbing the ball against its leg. Oh, it's the Smarties advert. It's quite funny. Oh, no, it's the cricket again.
Alan, listen to this. Found themselves in double trouble?
I think it's about that woman. I don't know why Diana, Princess of Wales, as the BBC requires us now to call her, is always referred to as a loose cannon. It's so sort of physiologically inexact. What she actually is a loose porthole. A great deal of time on boats. The best piece of music would have been when I was young, there was a song that went, "Sons of the sea bobbing up and down like this," and there is a son of the sea, one Dodie Fayed, who's been bobbing up and down, depending how the newspapers crop the pictures. And he was there with this Diana Princess of thing, and she then went on to another boat, another freebie around the Greek islands, and now she's gone off again with Rosa Monckton, who is the who's the daughter-in-law of Nigel Lawson. And Rosa Monckton runs Tiffany's. I don't know how you get all these free trips. You know, she's got a Harrods card. She's probably got a Tiffany's card for diamonds. I have had a Tesco's customer card for years. Do you know, I haven't even had a bloody free weekend in Clacton with Anne Widdecombe. I mean, nothing. But anyway, I think it's about her, and it's about the Egyptian, the Fayeds, and their boats, and what they get up to.
Do you think she's so frightened of landmines that she can't bear to spend any time on land anymore?
The Queen is said to be concerned in case Diana should make the terrible mistake of marrying the son of some foreign family who came to Britain acting as if they owned the place. In the battle for press coverage, Camilla's friend gave an interview last week saying that she had no intention of marrying Prince Charles and was simply happy to breathe the same oxygen as him. At least that's what's cleared up by reports of her going to Highgrove at night to enjoy a good mouthful of the air. And the scores at the end of round one are Francis and Fred 4, Alan and Steve 4. Start round two with an item spotted in the Daily Mail.
The acrimonious dispute which reduced Heathrow to chaos yesterday took a dramatic twist last night. British Airways revealed that 500 new recruits are being trained to take over from striking airline cabin staff, and a further 3,000 were waiting in the wings.
Thanks to Joseph of Chipping Norton for that. Francis, which blue leader was red-faced over a lack of pink prose?
Oh, it's William Hague. William Hague, I think, the decaffeinated version. He is jolly decaffeinated, I must say. He never keeps me awake at night. But He's done a good job. He promised a fresh start, and he brought in all these fresh faces like Cecil Parkinson and Norman Fowler. And I think Benjamin Disraeli is rather hoping for a job. But the publishing industry is unimpressed. Somebody wanted to write a biography of Haig, and I mean, I've read in the last year or two two biographies of Kenneth Clark, one of Portillo, one of John Prescott. Somebody's doing one of Mandelson, but no one wants Haig. No publisher will touch him. They say readers simply won't cope with that sort of boring rubbish, which surprised me a bit, because who buys all these Geoffrey Archer novels, if not the sort of people who would love to read a biography of William Haig, i.e. people who can't read, really. But that's what's happened. No one wants to know about his life, or indeed hear from him ever again, really.
But like Alan Clark and other great conservatives before him, William has been keeping his diaries, and I've got an entry here. Went to Aunt Mabel's for tea. Yum, yum.
So that was Alan Clark. Because there was a very similar entry about Mabel. Fred, how were Camelot brought to bookie?
This was a court case where Camelot are contesting a game that's been brought out by a conglomerate of bookies who have called themselves 49ers Limited, and they've been to court four times, which just proves that litigation is addictive. they've lost. They're going to appeal, and they've been asked to stump up over £300,000 for the other side's legal costs, and they've offered to pay it in scratch cards.
Yes, lottery operator Camelot's failure in the courts to stop the rival 49ers game run by bookmakers. But this week's lucky winners shared a £300,000 jackpot, but said it wasn't going to change their lives. They were still going to carry on as lawyers. 2 points to Fred, and Steve, listen to this. Which tube changes in the pipeline?
Now, yes, the London Underground, ladies and gentlemen, a subject almost as dear to the hearts of an Edinburgh audience as cricket, I suspect. But there is a sort of wider aspect to this story, because I'm very cross about this. The London Underground map, whatever you may think of London, or indeed the London Underground map is an acknowledged masterpiece of design. So what London Underground have done is they've decided to change it, because tourists don't understand it, right? And the reason they don't understand it is because the stations aren't exactly spaced in the way that they really are in real life. And hence the famous Underground announcement, mind the gap. It may not be exactly to scale. Extremely cross about this, because I can't believe that any tourist who is so stupid as to assume that the tube map is a perfect representation of what London looks like above ground is going to be able to find their way onto the tube anyway. They're going to be too busy waiting to cross the road, going, oh, we can't cross here, only little green luminous people can cross here.
Right, so 2 points to Steve and Alan, who left a mummy in Egypt.
He's not really fired.
No, it's not.
Oh, I know who it is. It's a... Yes, it's not so much a loose cannon, it's as a loose swingometer, isn't it? Yes, it's the man with the loose swingometer. It's Peter Snow. A lot of people's children have been turning up. They didn't know they'd had children, they just put it about a bit. And it was Huey Green and Martin Amis and Claire Short. And the latest is Peter Snow. It's quite unnerving for people of a certain age. I mean, I... now my turn to ingratiate myself with the Scots audience. 20 years ago, I was rector of St. Andrews for three extremely happy years, very happy years. And occasionally I think, I can't actually see the audience, but looking out there, there's probably a lot of bald women smokers who are even now thinking, that's my daddy up there. They were lovely undergraduates.
Yes, it's Peter Snow who announced this week that he's the father of an illegitimate son, now aged 33. It was a terrific surprise to all the Newsnight team that it was Peter Snow, because usually when a good stuffing is called for, people use Paxo. 2 points to Alan, and 8 points to everybody at the end of round two. Francis, who are told to keep their underwear under wraps?
Oh, it's one of those privatised railway companies. Rather magnificently named one as well. It's called Connex. Connex South Central, I think its name is. It's owned by the French. And like all these privatised railway companies, they've made themselves rather unpopular over the last few months. And they've been wondering why this is. And they've realised it's not because passengers are shunted into a siding at Penge for 2 hours or any of that sort of thing. It's because some of the female ticket inspectors might be wearing black bras. I mean, you can't see that they're wearing black bras for obvious reasons, because they don't just get on in bras and pants. They do wear proper clothes as well. But nevertheless, the threat of that black bra is hidden there underneath the ticket inspector, and it's thought to be upsetting the passengers. So they've sent out an order saying, no black underwear, please. And then they were accused of sexism. So they've now turned it into a general order saying, no black underwear for either men or women, and no Union Jack patterned boxer shorts either. And this is going to make the trains run on time. I don't know quite how, but...
Fred, listen to this.
Yes, I'm the great pretender. Pretending that I'm doing well. My need is such. I pretend that too much. I'm lonely, but no one can tell.
Who only put it about that he put it about?
Is this Casanova?
It is.
Right. Casanova left diaries that said, went to Aunt Mabel's for tea, and shagged her. But he didn't. I think I don't know how they only found it out now, because he was born, well, 200 odd years ago, but he didn't put it about as much as he claimed to have done. The one thing I know about Casanova, apart from the fact that he claimed to have thousands of women, was that he was expelled from school, and I quote, for conducting himself in an unsatisfactory manner. And which begs the question, what was he using for a baton? he wasn't as good in bed as he claimed to have been, and he was described as a lady killer, which does suggest he was doing something wrong.
It's a shock news that Casanova's reputation may have been largely his own invention. Italian scholars have concluded that the great lover was actually a deep and serious philosopher. So in future, people are going to have to think very carefully before calling Peter Stringfellow a Casanova. Alan, how does the rain on the plane mean money down the drain?
Oh. Yes, one of the little-known things until this week, actually, one of the little-known things about the stealth bomber, which costs America £2 billion for each plane, is that at an early stage of its development, British Rail was involved. The audience has stood on Waverley Station waiting is ahead of me. This means the stealth bomber can't go out in the rain as the paint comes off. If you turn up at Waverley, hoping to be bombed by the stealth bomber, there will be a sign saying, due to the wrong kind of rain, the stealth bomber will not be available today. Those wishing to be bombed will have to get into a fleet of coaches who will take them to Glasgow, where a number of B-57s will be waiting to drop napalm on them. Yeah, they've spent all the money on this thing, so it can't be seen on radar, and they flew it to the Farnborough Air Show, and it showed up on the radar, and they said, that's funny. And it's because it rains in Hampshire, and the rain fell on the stuff, and suddenly this plane appeared out of nowhere. And it's not stealthy at all. The mistake the Pentagon made, of course, was to build it at all, because it was supposed to be invisible. So they didn't need to build it, they were just saying.
And the scores at the end of round three are, inevitably, Francis and Fred 12, Alan and Steve 12. Francis, listen to this. Francis, whose adventure on the briny wasn't too brainy?
This was a chap who got stranded in Calais or Boulogne or somewhere and couldn't afford the ferry back. So just climbed onto the nearest pallet and tried to drift back, which turned out to be rather a bad idea. He was eventually fished out of the North Sea, half frozen to death, on this little pallet. And he's a Scotsman, I noticed. So I did just wonder if he'd been nipping over to stock up on duty-free booze in the hope that he could get admission to the Paisley Labour Party. He's now been, but it's done him a power of good, because once he was put back to rights again, he's now had offers of sponsorship from a dentist in Harley Street, a pallet-making company, free ferry tickets for life, which was presumably what he intended all along. I don't know. It seems to me like a PR stunt that may have gone slightly wrong, but ended up with a happy ending. But he's called Lawrence Trivett or some such name, I think.
See the bit about the dentist. Why would the dentist in Harley Street be? He wasn't hanging on by his teeth, was he?
Oh, no, but he was...
I always get my dentist from number 14 Harley
His
Street.
Teeth have been chattering and been slightly damaged by all this chattering and the freezing cold. And a dentist happened to read this and thought he needs tooth treatment. I'll get myself some publicity by ringing up and volunteering to do it for nothing.
He lost four teeth because he got hit by a tanker.
As you were.
And... that sort of flipped him over, and he lost his teeth in the pallet because his hat, he had his rucksack, and he was trying to hold on to his rucksack with his hands, and he had to bite on the pallet. So what astonished me about it was that he slept. He fell asleep. And he clearly hadn't booked a sleeping pallet.
Steve, who voiced Dissent about his descent?
Oh, this was quite a dull story, wasn't it? Yes. This was one of those wacky heraldry stories, which was quite boring. I only read it, actually, because I'm just sick and tired this week of reading about people getting their exam results. Is it my imagination, or have they gone more and more and more over the top this year than ever before? Last week, it's A-level results, coverage in all the papers, this week, GCSEs, all... I mean, I got my O-level results. I didn't expect it to be on the front page of every paper. Do you know, GMTV on Wednesday night, they were putting out a trail that went, tomorrow morning, we have live coverage of three people opening their GCSE results. And I thought, oh, there's a BAFTA contender, if ever there was one. This is great. Next year, we do live coverage of people taking their cycling proficiency test. Yeah, this was a dull story about some bloke who had his coat of arms done, and it was wrong. And that
yeah, he went to the Press Complaints Commission or some such thing. Advertising Standards Authority, in fact.
The Burke's Book of Knees. It's wonderful because his name was Knee. And it's extraordinary.
And he expected to have a decent coat of arms.
Well, they made one up. He hasn't got a coat of arms. They just invented one.
They invented one for someone called Knee. What was on it?
Have a guess.
Mr. Peter Knee complained to the Advertising Standards Authority after being offered a Knee family coat of arms he knew did not exist. A spokesman for Burke's Peerage, who made the offer, apologised for the mix-up. He should, of course, have been offered a coat of knees for the Arms family. And to compensate for their mistake, Burke's Peerage has offered him a coat of elbows for the Arse family. The company specialises in mail shops, offering to research people's family trees. In rural Norfolk, these are more commonly known as circulars. Alan, your final question. Why might it soon be raining cats and cats?
Yes, there's a wonderful statistic that we stopped neutering cats in Britain, apparently, and one male cat in its lifetime can produce 20,000 kittens, which means by the year 2010... everybody in Britain will be a cat. I mean, there'll only be room for cats. So what is happening is that the government, new labour, new neutering, is introducing subsidised cat neutering. I mean, this is serious, it is, isn't it? And poor people will be able to get neutering vouchers at the post office. It's absolutely true. Of course, it's come a bit late for Peter Snow and people like that. But people are going to be encouraged to have their cats neutered, so there aren't millions of these moggies running around.
But it's all part of New Labour's sort of King Herod policy, isn't it? Because you see, Kim Howells, one of the education ministers this week, talking about GCSEs, said, we want to see underperforming children eliminated. slightly extreme way of getting the results figures even higher. They just slip some cyanide in their alka-pops if they look like the But this is what Labour's doing.
Many parts of the country have already been hit by the telltale signs of the terrible yowling and incessant wailings that accompany cats. But in spite of this, Andrew Lloyd Webber has insisted that the Tories... So before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
This is from the Times, Simon, and it's about Viscount Cranbourne, Tory leader in the House of Lords, who's taken up pig-keeping. He says, I have two Tamworth sows and a large black sow called Black Beauty, which my wife gave me for Christmas. She's an excellent specimen and recently came third in the Bath and West show.
Fred.
This is from the Eastern Daily Press, submitted by John Stabler. Thank you very much for that. And it's about a chap who tried to get £30,000 out of Sainsbury's. He disguised his handwriting on his letter to them. He wore gloves to avoid fingerprints and used water to put the stamp on the envelope so that his saliva could not be traced. If you don't put £30,000 in the above bank account, I will contaminate the control of the product. And it goes on, when he was arrested...
Steve.
Yes, I've got an article from the Birmingham Evening Mail. Says, police in the Black Country were left speechless by a forgetful pensioner who asked for their help after losing his car. The unnamed elderly man had parked in Stourbridge but could not remember where, nor the make, model, nor registration. Police found an MOT certificate on him and the constable toured the area with him. They found a car bearing the registration, but he was adamant it was not his. Meanwhile, back at the police station, a national check revealed that the car in question was a Toyota. Realising that it might be his car after all, the pensioner was overwhelmed with joy and profusely thanked both officers. He then climbed into their patrol car and tried to drive away from it.
Alan.
Well, my first question was about nautical knobs, so it's nice to be rather cyclic and take this piece from Thursday's Times Diary, Simon, which is about Lady Arran, who at 79 is going back to powerboat racing. And the diarist asked her why, and she said, the nice thing about the sea is that anything can happen. I've seen a bit of rough and been turned over once or twice. And it was great fun.
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final scores. Francis and Fred, 16, but thanks to my incredibly dishonest scoring system, Alan and Steve are winners with 16 and a half points. And before we have our final clipping, can I ask listeners to send in any cuttings that have amused them to the BBC for the show? Thank you. Meanwhile, here's a cutting from the big issue sent in by Brian Oliver of Guildford.
Italian bank robber Ernesto Trofi burst into a bank, seized a boy from the queue and dragged him screaming to the counter, tugging his ears and threatening worse damage unless staff handed over all their money, which they duly did. Mr. Trofi and the boy then rushed from the bank together, whereupon it emerged that the boy was not a boy at all, but a midget accomplice who had been in on the scam from the start. The pair have since been arrested. He was a convincing child, admitted one eyewitness, apart from the moustache and tattoos.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corran, Francis Ween, Fred McCauley, and Steve Hunt. The chairman was Simon Hoggart, and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Ian Pattinson, Hugh Rycroft, and David Spicer. The broadcast assistant was Carol Smith, and the producer was Alad Evans.